All right. Good evening, everybody. So it is now Tuesday evening, May 3rd, and it is about 8:50 p.m. So I was going to try and get this lecture done earlier. I had meetings today that I had to go and do, and then I wound up with a migraine in the afternoon. So I'm feeling a little bit off, but we're going to give this a shot. I'm trying to get this up tonight because tomorrow's going to be another big day for me. And so I want to make sure that this is up and everybody has access to the information. So I'm going to pick it up. We're going to do the SN1, SN2, E1, E2 examples. So this is the examples lecture. This is where we just go through as many examples as we can using the magic sheet and tying it together with how do we decide whether a reaction is going to go SN1, SN2, E1, E2. Sort of a big lecture. It's a hard lecture. And there's some fumbling that happens. The first couple of examples are going to be slower. The next couple of examples, we'll pick it up. The examples are chosen to highlight certain ideas. And certainly they're not, I mean, I'd have to do so many examples in order to show you everything. There's no way I can possibly show you everything, but I'm going to try to show you a lot, and I'm going to try to hit certain ideas and concepts within each one of the problems. So hang in there, let's get started. And let me do a screen share and take you over to the iPad. All right, success, SN1, E1, SN2, E2 examples. All right, the other day we did an example. I'm just going to put that back up real quick. This is what we did from last lecture. And we had an example that was an aromatic ring. This had a stereo sensor in it. And an OTS group, tosylate group. And we were doing this with sodium azide in acetone. And 30 degrees Celsius. And a lot of the things that we highlighted in this, we said that this reaction had a good nucleophile. That was the N3 minus nucleophile. By the way, that is nitrogen, which has two negative charges on each of the ends and a positive charge. So the net overall charge is a minus one. So that's what that nucleophile is. Very strong, very good nucleophile. The leaving group was an extremely good leaving group. This was the OTS group. And that OTS group, we said that that was one of the sulfonate leaving groups. That was a tosylate leaving group. So that thing equaled oxygen, sulfur, double bond, and then to the aromatic ring with the methyl group on the para position. So that's a very good leaving group. The other thing is the substrate. When we looked at the substrate, the substrate is that this was a secondary benzylic position. So the benzylic position is a position when you have an aromatic ring system and you're at that, well, that doesn't really highlight, it doesn't, it looks like an oxygen. Let's do it this way. That is the benzylic position on a carbon that comes off an aromatic ring system. That's benzylic. And acetone, the solvent, was polar, but aprotic. And the temp, as we go through and highlight out that temp was sort of mid. It's not high, it's not low, And so it really wasn't telling us very much. Each one of these things tells us quite a bit. The benzylic position is really good for SN2. The good leaving group can be anything. The good nucleophile really helps with SN2. The polar aprotic solvent helps with SN2. Many of these things could highlight different things though. So a good leaving group is good for SN1, it's good for SN2, it's good for E1, it's good for E2. So the good leaving group really doesn't tell us very much. The temp isn't really telling me very much because it's not a high temp and it's not a low temp per se. But that good nucleophile, that substrate, particularly the substrate, is really critically important, and that's telling me SN2. And so as I'm looking at each of those things, I'm seeing a lot of things that are aligning towards SN2. It's showing up over and over again as a really strong possibility. And so that tells me that my product should be an SN2. Now, my job is to go through and to do the mechanism and then to do the SN2 mechanism, which is the backside attack. And that means that I'm going to have inversion of configuration. And so what I'll do is I'll go through and do that inversion of configuration. I'll say that the nucleophile, the N3, comes from the backside, and that the proton is inverted, and that is the SN2 product that I'll highlight out as major. Number of different ways that it could be drawn, but that's how we go through and do that decision-making. How we highlight out the groups, which way we highlight out the groups, is not critical. I mean, we could list them in order of the magic sheet, and I'll bring the magic sheet back in a little bit. We'll go through and we'll use that magic sheet on the next couple of examples. But the main thing that was here that was going on that I didn't talk so much about was the difference between this group, this methoxide group, and this group, the tosylate group, and which of these two groups is the leaving group, because there's a possibility here that we could be confused about what the leaving group is. Let's take a look at that molecule and draw that molecule out one more time. And perhaps what I'll do is I'll expand out that tosylate group. So that we can consider what's going on with this tosylate group and why this is the good leaving group. And why the other thing is not a leaving group, more importantly. So I have two groups to consider. I need to turn down how big my highlighter is though first. Okay, so I got two groups to consider. I got this group here, which is the OTS group. And then I've got this group over here to consider as to which one of those is actually the leaving group. Well, when those two groups come off, what I see is that as the tosylate comes off, it comes off with a negative charge on the oxygen as a leaving group. And that this group has a tremendous amount of resonance stabilization. The negative charge on the oxygen can be stabilized by all three oxygens. When a methoxide group comes off, it doesn't have the same stability. This is far more stable. As a leaving group. This one is a very poor leaving group because it's not very stable as an anion. And the job of a leaving group, or what makes a good leaving group, is to be very stable when it comes off. So we're looking for lots of resonance or a large group such as a bromide, to be a really good leaving group. And that's what we tend to look for instead of O minuses. O minuses without some sort of resonance stabilization are not very good leaving groups. And so that's how we can see that. This, by the way, another word for this is decoy. It's a decoy leading group. It looks like it could be the leading group, but really what's going on is this group over here at the tosylate is the good leading group. So that's part of why that problem was thrown in there. All right, let's jump into a new problem now. Let's take a look at example two here. So this one starts off this way. This has an aldehyde. And then alpha to the aldehyde, we'll put a stereocenter and we'll put a chloride group. This is reacting with potassium tert butoxide. It's doing it in tertiary butanol, minus 10 degrees C. Okay, so let's start mapping this out. Let's start figuring out what we've got. And maybe this is an appropriate time to bring in that magic sheet. So let me get that. I have it queued up to make it easy. There we go. Okay, so we've got the magic sheet in here. Now what we need to do is we need to start taking a look at each one of these things. We need to classify the substrate. We need to find the leading group. We need to do all those other things. So let's first off, let's find the leaving group. There it is. The chloride is going to be our leaving group in this case. So I usually kind of do it this way. And that means that I'm going to be interested in where that leaving group is attached in order to classify the substrate. So the substrate in this case is, this is, by the way, when I look at a carbonyl like this, this is the alpha position to a carbonyl. This is an alpha. This is a halogen. So this is a halo, alpha halo aldehyde. So the substrate is alpha halo aldehyde. And we could also classify it and say that that's really a secondary position, that it's a secondary carbon that we're looking at. And my leaving group, as we've said, is a chloride. All right, let's go see what those are on the magic sheet. We'll just take that one step at a time. Notice here that I have alpha halo ketone, alpha halo ester, alpha halonitrile. What these are, when we look at, and benzylic, what these are, and I wish I had a little bit more room here to write them in. Maybe I'll write it down here. Alpha halo ketone. This is a ketone that has a halogen next to it in the alpha position. Alpha halo ester. Very similar animal. This is an ester that has a halogen in the alpha position to it, alpha to the carbonyl. We had alpha halonitrile. Alpha halonitrile, and nitrile is a CN group. So this is N triple bonded to a carbon. And then the alpha position would be here, and this would be the alpha halonitrile. Now, let me also put benzylic into this. A benzylic position is when I have some leaving group in this position. Now, what do these all have in common? We're looking at the carbon that is here. and here, and here, and here. All of these groups, when I look at them, they are next to a carbon that is sp2, a carbon that is sp2. This one is a carbon that is sp. This one is a carbon, oops, wrong carbon highlighted. This is next to an sp2 center. So sp2 and sp carbons have very low sterics. They have low sterics because they're flat trigonal planar or linear. And because of those low sterics, we know that one of the things that impacts an SN2 reaction the most is sterics. Lower the sterics, and you make that reaction much faster. And so that's why we see in this substrate that we see benzyl, alpha haloketone, alpha haloester, alpha halonitrile as being really good substrates for SN2 reactions because they have low sterics. That's what this is all about. So recognizing those substrates as having low sterics, that's really critical. Okay. And then we look at everything else and we see that when we look at substrates for other things, it's tertiary, then secondary, then primary, tertiary, then secondary, tertiary, then secondary, then primary. So really it's about finding those low steric substrates that favor SN2 reactions. Okay, so now we go back up and we say, well, what do we have here? We have an alpha haloaldehyde, which was not on my list, but alpha haloketone, alpha haloaldehyde, very similar. And so this is really good for SN2. This is a strong SN2 indicator. And then a chloride, in terms of a chloride, we can go down and we can look at it. Sulfonates are better than iodides, are better than bromides, are better than chlorides. Chlorides are an okay leaving group, but they're not a stellar leaving group. So this is an okay leaving group. But the leaving group sometimes doesn't really tell me a whole lot. So is this telling me SN1? Is this telling me SN2? Is it telling me E1, E2? Usually what happens here with an okay leaving group, E1, SN1 are usually out. It usually strikes these two because in order to have an E1 or an SN1, you have to have a good leaving group. It has to want to break fairly easily in order to go to the carbocation. And chlorides don't want to just come off that easily. And there's not a whole lot of resonance stabilization here for a carbocation. So E1 and SN1 are kind of out because of the chloride. So it's telling me more of what is out than what is in, right? So that means that what is still in is still my SN2 is still in, and my E2 is a strong possibility as well. All right, nucleophile. And along with that nucleophile, I would include the word base. Because whether it's a nucleophile or a base, we're looking at the same species. And so here what we're looking at is we're looking at this guy, potassium tert-butoxide. Maybe I should classify over here as to where I start looking at things. My leaving group, of course, was the green, was the chloride. Substrate, I'm going to put a color to substrate. I'll leave that one alone. Okay, so I'm dealing with potassium tert-butoxide. This thing equals the potassium ion as the counter ion and the oxygen attached to a tertiary butyl group. And when we have looked at this in the past, we have said that this is a strong bulky base. I'm going to just use the word bulky base because that's how we've always referred to this thing. It is non-nucleophilic. it's a really poor nucleophile. It really is a bulky base. When we go and we look at what's going on over here, and we look at the different things that we need for a nucleophile, for an SN2, we need a good nucleophile, a weaker base than hydroxide. Must be weaker than hydroxide. For an E2, bulky or strong base. There's that word right there, bulky or strong base, greater than hydroxide. We have a bulky base that we're dealing with. SN1, weak nucleophile, no anions. Well, we have an anion, so it's not an SN1. And any anionic base for an E1. So anything will do E1 if it's anionic. But really, I'm seeing that word bulky, and that bulky base component, that's what this is. This is really highlighting me towards an E2 mechanism is what that is telling me. The solvent. The solvent here, let's choose blue for solvent, is tertiary butanol. This is a polar protic solvent. And with solvent, we've got a bit of an issue. Let's go look and see what solvent says for polar protic. Solvent, polar aprotic for SN2, polar aprotic for E2, polar protic for SN1, and polar protic for E1. So these are telling me SN1 and E1. Is what that polar protic is. Let's come back to that in a minute. Temperature. I need a color for temperature. What are we going to do? Let's grab and do gray for temperature. So temp, when I look at this, this is minus 10 degrees C. That is certainly not a high temperature. This is a low temperature, if anything. Especially considering that I have a chloride as a leaving group. So that temperature is not high enough to make that chloride come off unless there was a tremendous amount of resonance stabilization or some other stabilization that was happening that would make that come off. So this is a low temperature. And when we start to look at low temperature, we come over here to the magic sheet and we look and see, all right, what's required for each one of these things? Low is SN2. High is E2, low is SN1, high is E1. So I'm the SN2, SN1. All right. So when I look at that now, I've got SN2, SN2, E2, E2, SN1, E1, SN2, SN1. If I simply went by the thing that's showing up the most, SN2 shows up three times. I think it's the only one that shows up three times. Everything else shows up a few times. And there's no, I mean, if I was just going by the thing that is showing up the most, I would say SN2, except for the fact that I'm dealing with a bulky base. I'm dealing with something which is non-nucleophilic. This becomes critical. This critical component right here means that because it's non-nucleophilic, particularly that non-nucleophilic component, what non-nucleophilic tells me is that anything that requires a nucleophile is out. I can't do SN2 because I don't have a nucleophile. I can't do SN2 because I don't have a nucleophile. I can't do SN2 because I don't have a good nucleophile. And I can't do anything that is going to allow for a carbocation because I can't generate a very stable carbocation here. I don't have a strong enough leaving group and enough stability for a carbocation. So anything that is an SN1 or E1 is out. So this guy is out. This guy is out. What does that leave me with? It leaves me with E2. In other words, the fact that this was only a base made it the most critical factor out of all the things that I was looking at. Now, normally substrate is the most important, but depending upon certain reagents and certain things that are happening, other things can take priority rather than substrate. And so this becomes an E2 reaction. And now I need to go through an E2 mechanism in order to sort out what's actually happening here. Let's deal with the E2 mechanism. And then I hear this, but wait, it's a polar product solvent that really helps out with these things. We need to come back and talk about why this is in the solvent that it's in and a little bit of its solvent. But let's go and do that E2 mechanism real quick. Now, to do an E2 mechanism on this, we need to find the proton that we're going to pull that's going to create the double bond. And there's a visible proton because of the aldehyde that's being shown here, and it is alpha to the leaving group. So, I mean, it could be that would be the proton that I would pull, but that proton is already on an sp2 hybridized carbon and is not likely to be the proton that gets pulled. Otherwise, I would create some funky group here that I haven't really seen before with a double bond connected to another double bond connected to an oxygen. So I'm going to consider that most of the time when I look at doing an E2 reaction, it's on two tetrahedral carbons. And so the protons that I'm going to be considering are these protons here. So let's draw that. Oh, we need to insert a pitch. All right, so what we've got to consider is that our leaving group, the chloride, sits here. And we have two protons that can be pulled that are adjacent to it. And which proton we pull? We can't just pull any proton. We have to pull the proton which is anti to the leaving group. And so there may be two possible products that could be made from pulling either one of these protons, and we need to consider what those two products are. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look down this bond. We're going to sight down this one and see what is going on in that bond in terms of a Newman projection. And the first thing that I'll notice is that the aromatic ring is at the top on the front carbon. I have two protons, right and left. In the back, I have these three groups. The group that is down is the aldehyde. The group that is on the left is the chloride, and the group that is on the right is a proton. Now, this is my leaving group. And I need to pull the proton anti-periplanar to it. This proton on the left is not anti-periplanar to the chloride, although it could be through a bond rotation, which is why I have a second one here waiting to draw. So I'm going to leave the chlorine alone. I'll leave the back carbon alone. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to rotate the molecule, and I am going to put the phenyl group on that side and the two hydrogens here. And now I can look at the leaving group again, and now I've got the other proton anti-periplanar to it. So what's going to happen is I'm going to be able to make two possible products. I'm going to use the base, the potassium terbutoxide. Maybe I should just draw potassium terbutoxide. Let's draw O. My group here, this is going to take the proton. This is going to kick in the electrons, kick out the leaving group, and I'm going to make the first product. That product, when I pull that proton, what's going to happen is these groups are going to collapse towards each other, and these groups are going to collapse towards each other to make the double bond. So I'm going to get pH and then the hydrogen adjacent to it, hydrogen on this side, and the carbonyl. Bad bond angle, but you get the idea. This is equivalent, that's not what I want to do, to the double bond with, on one carbon, I have the aromatic group. Let's change it from the pH now back to the aromatic ring. And the aromatic ring is on the same side of the double bond as the hydrogen. And then this is the aldehyde. That's one product that can be made. The other product is where that potassium tert-butoxide pulls the proton, kicks the electrons in, kicks the chloride out. Now the two hydrogens collapse together, and the aromatic ring and the carbonyl collapse together. This makes a molecule where I've got the hydrogen and hydrogen on the same side. And then I've got the aromatic ring and the carbonyl on the same side. And that molecule looks like this. Okay, so one of these is major, one of these are minor. And it really comes down to sterics in the transition state. The transition state in these is product-like. So it's double bond-like. And what we see is that this one is the Z double bond, where the two groups are on the same side. That's the cis. This one is where they're opposite, entgegen, E. This is the E double bond. The sterics here are such that these two groups conflict with each other. I can see those same sterics happening up here, that I have the chloride, the phenyl group, and the carbonyl, the three large groups, all gauche to each other. Those gauche interactions make that a much higher energy transition state and disfavored. And what I have in this one is I have the large group, the phenyl group, on the front carbon, and the large group on the back carbon, the carbonyl, opposite each other. This one is anti. This one, the two groups are anti to each other, and that is lower energy. So we would expect that the E would be major and the Z minor. And so the product that we would expect would be this product here as my major product. We'll get both. We will get some of both, but it's really that product that is the major product. Okay, so lots of work had to go in. Not only did we have to decide the mechanism, but after deciding the mechanism, we had to apply the mechanism to be able to get to the product. All right, now back to this solvent thing. Why is the solvent tertiary butanol? Why don't I choose a solvent that is a polar aprotic solvent? It's about how we make potassium tert-butoxide. When we want to make potassium tert-butoxide, in fact, let me copy this two things that I want to hit here. We'll just start sort of a new redraw this so that we can talk about two of these topics. The first thing that I want to talk about is potassium in there, and tertiary butanol is the solvent. And the second thing that I want to talk about is that temperature. Solvent. Why? Polar product. And the answer is because when you take potassium metal and you react it with tertiary butanol, it's how you make potassium tert-butoxide. The byproduct is hydrogen gas. And so because that's how we make potassium tributoxide, it's what's called a solvent of convenience. The potassium tributoxide is really made in tertiary butanol. And so we use tertiary butanol because it's convenient, because it's how we make potassium tributoxide. So this is called a solvent of convenience. Second thing, temperature. Why is the temperature so low? Usually when I want to do an elimination, I go for a high temperature. Why would I use a low temp? So why would I use a low temp? The reason to that is, again, the potassium tributoxide. This is very reactive. Very exothermic. Actually, I wouldn't say very exothermic, but exothermic enough that it's problematic if I don't control the temperature. And so I lower the temperature in order to control the reaction. That's why the temperature is low in this one. And so we need to recognize that sometimes a low temperature is out of necessity to control a reaction, and sometimes a solvent is necessary because it's a solvent of convenience and it's how we make certain reagents. And so they don't play into the reaction as much. So a couple of things that were chosen there for those specific ideas. Okay, let's take and let's do another one. Scroll down, we'll get past the magic sheet. We'll add in an additional page. All right, good to go. All right, this is number three. Let's choose this one. I'm just gonna go down the list. I should stop trying to choose and I should just go down the list. This is a cyclopentane derivative. It's reacting with sodium acetate. It is in acetic acid. And it is a 40 degree C temperature. All right, we need substrate. We need leaving group. We need nucleophile or base, solvent, and temp. Leaving group. Sometimes the easiest thing to find is just the leaving group. This equals a bromide, and that's a pretty good leaving group. It's not the best, it's not the worst. It's pretty good. When we take a look at the substrate and where that thing is sitting, it's sitting in this position here. And if I want to classify that position is a tertiary position. It's just a tertiary carbon. I don't need to quantify it any more than that. There's nothing else next to it that's going on. It's just a tertiary bromide position that is there. Nucleophile or base. Now what we're looking at is what is going on up here. I think I chose the wrong color for that. What have I been doing? I've been doing pink for that. Let's be consistent. At least I think that's what I've been doing. Sodium acetate. So the nucleophile or base is sodium acetate, OAC. This equals a sodium counterion and the acetate anion, which is the anion from acetic acid. So that's that guy. How does that stack up? What is that thing? Is that a nucleophile or is that a base or what is that? we may need to go to the table to find out. So let's go see what we've got. Where do we look to find this? Well, we can look over here on the nucleophilic constants page, and we can try to find where acetate is. And this is it, CH3CO2-. It has a nucleophilicity constant of 4.3 and a pKa of 4.8. Remember I said that if the pKa was greater than 15.7 or equal to 15.7, then it is a strong base, stronger than hydroxide. We are clearly much lower than that. We are 4.8. So this is not as strong a base as hydroxide. It actually, on the nucleophilic constant as well, it's a poor nucleophile because it's right at the top up here. These are poor nucleophiles. These are good nucleophiles. So we are both a weak base and poor nucleophile. All right, we still don't know how that stacks up SN1, SN2, E1, E2. I'm just trying to classify everything right now so that I know where they are and what's located what, and then I will go and I will see which things fit where. Okay, solvent. Solvent, I think I was making blue. And temp, I made gray. Temp was 40 degrees. Solvent was acetic acid. So ACOH is acetic acid, and that equals the carboxylic acid. This is polar protic. And my temp at 40 degrees C is not super high, but it's higher. It's elevated. Maybe that's the way to say that. It's being heated to some degree, because it's not room temperature, so it's heated to some degree. All right, now that we have all those things listed, now we can sort of go back over and we can see what do each one of these things do. In the magic sheet, when I look at tertiary substrates, what I find is that SN2 requires those low steric ones, where benzyl and allyl are better than methyl, are better than primary, better than secondary, so SN2 is out. E2, tertiary, SN1, tertiary, E1, tertiary. This thing is really telling me that that the SN2 is the only thing that is really out. So I'm gonna cross that out as not viable, but I could go E1, I could go SN1, I can go E2. All of those are possible. The bromide as a good leaving group doesn't really tell me much, because bromide and substrates show up in these all the same. Sulfonate better than iodide, better than bromide, but it's exactly the same all the way through. So what I do is with the leaving group, I kind of gauge the leaving group together with the temperature. And when I'm looking at temperature at 40 degrees, is there enough energy to be able to kick this bromide off and go through a carbocation? And in this instance, I think there might be. We've got a tertiary leaving group. Tertiary is a pretty good spot for a carbocation. And we've got some higher energy in here. So this good leaving group, maybe this is really telling me that I'm going E1, SN1, because of, and I'll add it in, because of the elevated temp. And what that's really telling me is that this thing is likely to go through carbocation. The base, weak base, poor nucleophile. Let's go see what that's telling us. SN2 is sort of off the table. So because SN2 is already sort of off the table, we can ignore that. Plus it needs a good nucleophile and we've got a poor nucleophile. Bulky or strong base. Well, we don't have a bulky or strong base, so that's taken off E2. So then that means I'm between the SN1 and E1, weak nucleophile, no anions. Acetate is an anion, SN1 is out. That means that this is really going only E1, any anionic base. So what we're seeing here is that based on this base, I almost need a little bit more room. Maybe I can scoot this over just a little bit more. That SN2 is out. E2 is out because that needs a strong base. SN1 is out because no anions for an SN1. And so that really means E1 is where we're at. And so I'm going to cross off SN2, E2, SN1. That base is telling me that E1 is really the only viable thing. Polar protic solvents. Polar protic, does that work well with an E1? It does. Polar protic solvents both go E1 and SN1, but because we're honing in on E1 and it's starting to feel a lot like an E1, that polar protic solvent is feeling pretty good there. So polar protic, both SN1 and E1. And then the temp, the more elevated a temp is, the more it governs towards elimination. That would be my E1 and E2, but we've already said that E2, because of other things, is off the table. So when we took the SN1 and the E2 off the table, it's really telling me E1 is showing up over and over and over again. So the conclusion here is that this is an E1 reaction. And now we need to go through the E1 mechanism. So to go through the E1 mechanism with this, we'll take and we'll redraw this guy, and then we'll go through that E1 mech. All right. We have the chloride. We have two stereocenters over here. Chloride pops off. Oops, bromide, not chloride. Bromide pops off. Leaves behind a carbocation. The carbocation is flat, trigonal planar. And in fact, what I'll do is I'll say that I'm going to draw this in a flatter orientation. One way to do that is to do it out this way. Say that's my carbocation, and that back behind that carbocation, I have two methyl groups that are each on the top side of the ring system. And so as I'm doing that E1, now I'm going to be looking at pulling protons as I try to do E1. Let's make sure that we're doing this right. So I'll go back and I just want to check one thing. Weak nucleophile, no anions for the SN1, can't happen. So really anionic base, so we were E1. The protons that I'm going to pull are located in these two different positions. I have protons that are here and protons that are here and protons that are also out here. And I could pull any, I'm going to move these and carry them through just to make them a little bit easier to see that they're on the bottom side of the ring system. I think maybe what I'll do is the same thing here by taking it up to the top of the ring system. That front carbon. Okay. The difference between these positions. These two protons on the top of the ring system and on the bottom of the ring system, when they create a double bond and move the double bond into the carbocation, they're going to make the same thing, essentially. So what I could have is I could have a base that pulls that proton that pushes the electrons in here. If I do that, I'm creating a double bond that is going to be there. the two methyl groups are still on the top side of the ring system. So that thing, if I draw it back in sort of the flat orientation, that would be the double bond in that position. And my two methyl groups still on the top side of the ring system. If the base goes and pulls this guy and electrons push into that side, now what I'm doing is I'm creating the double bond on that side. The methyl groups are still up. That's this system where the double bond's on that side. And then the last one is if the base pulls the proton out here and pushes the electrons in that way, that's going to give me the double bond out there. And that system, when I look at that one, I'll get that. All right, so now looking at these molecules, what we can do is we can go through, these are all being done by the E1 mechanism. I can rank these now that this is a disubstituted double bond. By disubstituted, what we're looking at is we're looking at the two groups bound to the double bond there. This one is trisubstituted. This one over here, oops, is trisubstituted. And so really, if we are fairly elevated in temperature and we're assuming thermodynamic control, this would be kinetic and this would be thermodynamic. And what we've said is, unless special conditions are presented, we should always choose thermodynamic. And so these would be the major product or products that I would expect. Now, are these two products different? They are different. They're different in that they are enantiomers of one another. And so this is a set of enantiomers that has been created. If I flip this thing over, I believe it's the mirror image of this guy. And so these two would be considered enantiomers, and they would be the major product that would come out of that reaction. And that's what I would expect to see. So this one turns out to be this guy and this guy. Major 50-50 mix of both of those. And that would be by E1. And that's number three. All right, time check really quick. I forgot how long I was supposed to be going. Forgot when I started. I think I started at 8:50. We're coming up on an hour, so I've got another couple of minutes, another 10 minutes here. Let's go do another one. Number four. Nope, don't flip. Okay, number four is going to be another five-member ring system. Geminal dimethyls, stereocenter, OTF. This is a triflate reacting with sodium methoxide. And that's in methanol at minus 10 degrees. All right.
We need the substrate, leaving group, nucleophile or base, solvent, temp. And I just make the list and kind of go down the line. So the substrate here, when we look at the substrate, we track where the leaving group is. That's the position the leaving group is attached to. This is a primary substrate. Primary substrate should immediately point you towards SN2. Everything else was tertiary, was faster. But as soon as we get to primary, that should point you to SN2. And in fact, that is probably going to be the primary important thing in this one, because it's a primary substrate. The leaving group is a very good leaving group. It's an OTF, that's a triflate. That is equal to oxygen bound to sulfur bound to a CF3 group, which is very strongly electron withdrawing, which stabilizes that even more. So that's the triflate. Nucleophile or base. This is methoxide, OCH3. This is equally as strong as hydroxide, maybe a little bit stronger. So this is a strong base equal to greater than hydroxide. Equal to or greater than hydroxide. The solvent is methanol, polar protic. And the temp is on the low side at minus 10 degrees. Okay, so we've got to figure out what all of that is telling us. First off, we've already figured this part out. Substrate is telling me towards SN2. The better the leaving group, that really doesn't tell me much other than that if there was a possibility of forming a carbocation, this could really easily come off, but on a primary substrate, not likely, particularly with a low temp. So this very good leaving group is also sort of pointing me towards SN2 and saying that's good. The nucleophile or base, this is concerning. And it's leading to some questions. Let's go take a look and see why. All right, primary substrate really points me towards SN2. Nucleophile, good nucleophile, weaker base than hydroxide. E2, bulky or strong base, greater than or equal to hydroxide. But really about tertiary, secondary, or primary. And so my concerning point is that this strong base idea that I am, this is where I'm sitting right now. I'm sitting as a strong base equal to or greater than hydroxide, which is really pointing me towards E2 and very concerning in terms of SN2. So how do I make that decision? Because this is really pointing me towards E2. Let's come back. Polar protic. This is also concerning because polar protic is really pointing me towards SN1 and E1. And I don't know what to do with that. And my low temp, this is not so bad because this is really telling me substitution. So this is telling me SN1, SN2, that's really pointing me towards substitution. And that's okay because that SN2 is lining up with SN2 over here and SN2 over here. But this part, I keep coming back to this, what do I do with this? And the answer is that when it's on a primary substrate, the strength of the base is more or less irrelevant unless it happens to be a bulky base. So if it were a bulky base, then I'd have some serious concerns. But because it's not a bulky base, because it's on a primary substrate, this is, pardon the pun, of primary concern. The primary substrate is really telling me that this thing is going to go SN2. And that's what this reaction is going to be. And so we're going to alleviate those concerns because of the primary substrate. And even a strong base can undergo an SN2 reaction as long as it's not a bulky strong base.
that's a different animal. Something which is non-nucleophilic, which is going to look for a proton more than trying to replace something. That's potassium terbutoxide or lithium diisopropylamide. That's not what we have here. We have hydroxide, which is a small base and can also be a good nucleophile, even though it's equal to or stronger than hydroxide. And so we're calling this as SN2. And so now we need to go through the SN2 mechanism. So let's be clear about the SN2 mechanism. When we do an SN2 mechanism on this substrate, one of the things that students oftentimes see is they see the fact that there is a stereocenter and that they're going to be inverting the stereocenter because of that stereocenter. But look at where the stereocenter is. The stereocenter sits here. At that position is the stereocenter. The reaction is not happening at the stereocenter. The reaction is happening on the primary carbon, away from the stereocenter. See, one thing that highlights the stereocenter maybe even a little bit better is to think about the fact that the proton sits there. And I'm not reacting at the stereocenter. I'm reacting out at the end of the methyl. And so even though there's inversion of configuration, because I'm not reacting at the stereocenter is not inverted. And that's the product that I make. And I can draw it in any direction that I want because there's no relevance to the stereocenter. So I could replace it this way and draw it that way. I could draw it any way which I want, as long as that stereocenter stays intact, as long as it doesn't move. It's all good because the reaction was not at the stereocenter. So that is going to be the major product. A competing product, if I wanted to talk about what was the other product that could possibly be made from this and what would compete with this, I would say that a competing product may be the E2 reaction where the hydroxide acts as a base and it's a small base. And because of that, I would be looking at the kinetic I'd be looking at the thermodynamic more substituted double bond that could be created. So I'd be looking at creation of double bonds on the five-membered rings. No, take that back. The leaving group is only here on the primary. It has to be between there. It has to be the exocyclic double bond that gets created. Maybe now that I've talked about it, now I got to say it. Competing E2. Where is there a proton that I can pull in order to kick this guy out? The only proton that is accessible is that proton. And so in my competing E2, what I would have is the methoxide acting as a base, pulling the proton, kicking out the leaving group. And this is the only elimination reaction that can occur, which makes the double bond there. And that would be the E2 product. But that's going to be minor. All right, always good to, once I say something, follow it through and show sort of where it goes. All right, we got 10 more minutes. We got time for another one. Let's do this one. We have a tertiary alcohol. It is 2-methyl-2-butanol with sodium acetate in acetone. And 25 degrees Celsius. Okay, mapping this out. Substrate, leaving group, nucleophile or base,
solvent. Temp. Substrate. Clearly tertiary substrate. So when I'm looking at the substrate, I'm looking at the group there. The leaving group. The leaving group appears to be the hydroxide. And hydroxide as a leaving group is really a poor leaving group. Unless there is acid present in the reaction mixture, meaning that it needs something like HCl, H2SO4, phosphoric acid, H3PO4. It's these types of acids in order to convert it into a good leaving group. So poor leaving group. Nucleophile or base, this is the sodium acetate. We've seen this before. This was a poor nucleophile and also a weak base. So I'm trying to do a little bit of consistency so that we can talk about things that we've seen before. Acetone, as a solvent, this is polar aprotic. And then the temp is room temp, 25 degrees C. It's neither high nor low. It's middle. And maybe we don't know what to do with that. Okay, tertiary substrate. When we see tertiary substrate, they can go SN1, they can go E1, they can go E2. SN2 tends to be out on a tertiary substrate. Leaving group, poor leaving group. In fact, so much so as to say that there is no leaving group, that we don't currently have a leaving group because this thing is so poor that there isn't a leaving group. Nucleophile or base, poor nucleophile, weak base. We've seen this thing before. This thing really goes E1 is possible with this. SN1, no anionic bases for SN1, so E1 is really its only sort of possibility. And E1 requires a carbocation, requires a good leaving group. We don't have a good leaving group. Polar aprotic, these are really for SN2 and E2, more than SN1 and E1. And the temp isn't really telling me much. What comes here of primary concern is this, that I don't have a leaving group. If you don't have a leaving group, then you can't have an SN1 or an E1 or an E2 or an SN2. What you have when you don't have a leaving group is you have no reaction. You're going, well, wait a minute. That wasn't one of the possibilities. The possibilities have always been SN1, E1, E2, SN2. And we haven't really talked about anything where there is no reaction. And the answer is yes. A lot of times there is no reaction. Sometimes certain setups for various reasons can have no reaction. And these things can sit here and stare at each other all day long and no chemical reaction is going to take place. If the leaving group can't come off, if you have a hydroxyl group and there is no leaving group, then there can be no chemical reaction. And that is a possibility as well. And that's what happens here, no reaction. So no reaction is a possible outcome out of these that we need to be aware of and watch for in a lot of different cases. Look at the time. I got time for one more. Let's do one more. So that was, what was that? That was number 5. Let's move on to number 6. Number six is a six-membered ring system. OMS. This is a mesylate. Gem dimethyls in the four position relative to the mesylate leaving group. This is reacting with ethanol at a temperature of 40 degrees C. All right, substrate. Leaving group, nucleophile or base, solvent, temp. We should be able to look at this and see, all right, this is a tertiary substrate. The leaving group sits here. It's an OMS, a mesylate leaving group. So the substrate being tertiary, this is pointing me towards the unimolecular reactions. So this is pointing me towards E1, SN1 as a tertiary substrate. Oh, and E2, let's not forget that. E2 has favors tertiary as well. The leaving group is the O mesylate. This is a very good leaving group. So this equals the oxygen bound to the sulfur and then a CH3 group. It's not as good as a tosylate or a triflate, but it's a good leaving group. Venture to say very good leaving group. Nucleophile or base? None. There's nothing written over the arrow. When there's no nucleophile or base and only a solvent is presented, this looks like sulfolysis, which by definition, sulfolysis equals replacement by solvent, SN1, through the carbocation. And this is setting up to look like a carbocation with a tertiary substrate. Solvent, ethanol, polar protic. That favors SN1 and E1 off the magic sheet. And temp, 40 degrees, is elevated. Not super high, but it is elevated. Those elevated temperatures will oftentimes promote elimination E1, but they don't have to. Once we elevate the temperature, it could be just about forming the carbocation. And then once we form the carbocation, then what happens, happens. So what I'm seeing here are two things that are really important. I'm seeing the substrate, which is tertiary. I'm seeing that there is no solvent or nucleophile. No nucleophile. There is a solvent. There's no nucleophile. And that I have a good leaving group. And those three things together are telling me that it's probably going to go through a carbocation. Oh, I should say the elevated temperature. And the protic solvent. All of this really is telling me that it's going to go through the carbocation. And once it goes through a carbocation, that's really telling me SN1 and E1. And now what I can do is I can go back between SN1 and E1 and look at it on the magic sheet and see what the difference is. The difference here in an SN1 and an E1, they're both tertiary before secondary. They're both polar protic, but the nucleophile, weak nucleophile, no anions. This one, any anionic base. So if there's an anion in solution, this thing's going E1. No anions, it's going SN1. When we go back and look at it, that's really what the difference is about here. There is no nucleophile or no base. There is no anions. And because there's no anions, what happens is that it favors the substitution over the elimination. This is indeed a sulfolysis. And so we're going to throw this out. There is no anion. That's what's going to select for this. This is a sulfolysis. And so that is the SN1 mechanism. And now we've got to go through and do that SN1 mechanism. So let's run it out real quick. On an SN1 mechanism, we need to be careful
that we watch for carbocation rearrangements. Leaving group pops off. We go through carbocation. Equal approach above and below from the incoming nucleophile, which is ethanol. So this is above and attack from below. I'm going to draw one of them. Let me draw the above one. There's the protonated oxygen, oxonium ion, that is created when the ethanol attacks. And then the base is either another ethanol or something in solution. It doesn't need to have a negative charge in order to be a base. It just needs to have a lone pair of electrons. The base pulls the protons, giving the oxygen back its electrons, and we create product here. And we would also create the other one. But what I'm going to tell you is that these two are actually the same product. They're meso by symmetry. There's a plane of symmetry that runs right down the molecule right here. And so if you flip the molecule over, they are one and the same. They're the identical molecule. And so that is the molecule that gets created. And in terms of carbocation rearrangement, when we were at the carbocation, if we look at shifting the carbocation in any direction, if we shift it out here, we go primary. If we shift it over here, we go secondary, secondary. There's no place to shift the carbocation that doesn't make it less stable. So this is a tertiary carbocation, and there is no more stable shift. So we don't see any hydride shifts or alkyl shifts. And so this one just moves forward and we get that product, and that is the major product. So the major product out of this is the meso. And so we don't really need to include the stereocenter because it's meso. And that would be the major product that would come out of it. And that was an SN1 sulvolysis mechanism. And that is the sixth example, and I am spot on time. Let's cut it there. I think we might have one more day of looking at some things here, but really it's about practice. It's about you guys using that magic sheet and going through and doing the practice. Let me remind you, I've got the magic sheet in the notes here, but let me remind you where to get a clean copy of it, that you can go and do that. So if we want to do that, we go to Safari. We go and look at the fact that, yes, I'm looking at balances. Let's create a new page. Let's go to chemed.study. I should also put it on Canvas because I haven't done that. But where it sits, where it's always sat, is under additional resources. Click that additional resources link. Go down, second spot, nucleophilic substitution elimination reaction guide. Click that. There's the two-page PDF. That gets you exactly what you need. That's all the information. Okay? That's your main piece of information all in one place. And give it a shot. Start doing some practice problems. Work these through. Oh, the other thing I want to show you is that next co-op. Where is that thing hiding? Cooperatives. Nucleophilic substitution and elimination reactions. This is a co-op that I want you to do that goes through and has a lot of practice for SN1, SN2, E1, E2 reactions. And it has some competitions. It has a bunch of things to think about here that will really help with the SN1, SN2, E1, E2 reactions. and a bunch of practice problems to go through and do. All right. And I think I'm also going to send out a study guide that has a bunch of practice problems with answers and a key and solution. So I'm going to send that out as well too. And I'll link it in Canvas. I think I'll send it out on email to get it out faster. So lots of things coming at you here, lots of work to do. All right. I'll see you guys in lab tomorrow. For those people who are coming into lab tomorrow, most people completed the GC experiment. So I think it's only two groups that are coming in tomorrow morning. So we're going to have a short lab day. Everybody else who completed the GC, you don't need to come in tomorrow. And other than that, have a good weekend. All right. Thanks for watching. Take care, everybody. Be safe. Be well.